Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Special guest today will join us shortly, almost for the entire show, our colleague Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com. But Sean, we've got ourselves a series now. We got a game six, man. Another double overtime thriller. Corey Perry going to the net, gets a goal, Stars win. We got a series now, Sean.
Yeah, man, and we have a Sunday podcast. First one in the history of At the Rink, which is awesome. It's a good way to start your Sunday. Absolutely. Almost as good as church, but maybe it is church for some people. I hope so.
I think this is hockey church. This is hockey church, right?
So, but yeah, overtime in game four, no rest, back-to-back, complete rarity in Stanley Cup Finals, double overtime. It was 48 hours, 24 hours of fantastic hockey, I thought. But let's find out what Mike Zeisberger thinks. He's joining us today from Toronto, from cottage country, I believe, judging by his background. So, Mike, what did you think of the last 24 hours of hockey?
I thought it's been great, and congratulations on the success of the show, although you've had to dip down and invite me on it, so I'll try to get the level back up again. But no, I think, I hope all your families are safe and healthy. I always say that, in this time of a pandemic. And I think the hockey's been great, guys. Games four and five, overtimes, what more could you ask for? And ironically, you mentioned that I'm in cottage country north of Toronto. I'm about 35 minutes away from Peterborough, which is the hometown of Corey Perry, where during his junior days, some of his coaches, at least some of the fans, opposing fans, used to know him as the Pest of Peterborough. Well, he's graduated from there. And I think a lot of us might have thought, guys, that, the page had turned on Corey Perry's career. But you know what? He's got a second life, and he's been really, really important to the Stanley Cup aspirations of the Dallas Stars.
And it's really no coincidence, right, guys, that the two guys who have stepped up the most to keep this team, going this year in terms of the offense, Joe Pavelski and Corey Perry, veteran guys. This is why Jim Neal signed them in the offseason to play in these types of games. And what do they both do? They both go to the net. They both go to the net. And Sean and I were talking about it, Zeiss, before you came on, before we started recording, that that's how you score goals in the playoffs. And we hear it every single year. You got to go to the net. And there's two guys in the league that do it as well or better than everybody else going to the net.
Well, obviously, Joe Pavelski is now the leading goal scorer all time for American-born players in playoffs. I believe it's 61 goals now. He got past Joe Mullen. And you know what, guys? When I think of Joe Pavelski, I really think this guy is a little underrated in terms of, the three of us know his value and what he's brought to the table during what I think has been a very illustrious career. But, in his time in San Jose, I think he was overshadowed by Marlowe. I think he was overshadowed by Thornton, to some extent Brent Burns during his time there. And when he signed with the Stars, it really didn't have public pizzazz or impact that you would think a guy with his resume would have had. But what an ingenious move by general manager Jim Neal for both those guys. But Joe Pavelski is showing he's got a lot left in the tank. And good for him for finally getting, I know a lot of people have acknowledged how good he is, but I think once again, he's showing at a time where a guy like Tyler Seguin really has struggled a little bit in terms of putting points on the board. Joe Pavelski, to me, has picked up the slack and then some.
Well, let's not do some revisionist history here, right? Like, good on Jim Neal, but he was crushed early on for both of these signings.
Yeah.
Neither player was that great. And I thought maybe the best comment last night, I could listen to Rick Bonus talk hockey all day, every day. We should give him a podcast because it would be fantastic. But, in all the comments he made last night, he talked about the fact that the regular season for those two guys – didn't matter, and they weren't good regular seasons. I mean, Corey Perry had five goals. He has five goals this playoffs. So, that tells you a little bit about his regular season. He's like, that's not why we got these guys. He's like, we got these guys for the playoffs. And they're the guys that don't panic.
Yep.
They're the guys that we need in our room. You know, you look at like the Corey Perry goals. What's in common with all of those is he has the puck below the circles, around the net, and he doesn't get rid of it. You watch in these playoffs, guys get the puck, the slightest little bit of pressure, they throw it blind somewhere. Okay, it's not going to be my fault. I'm not going to turn the puck over. I'm going to get rid of it. Somebody else is going to take care of it. Corey Perry sticks his butt out a little bit, puts his stick out as far as he can so nobody can touch him, and he just waits. He waits until he has a chance. He waits till somebody else has a chance. As patient as can be, and know, because he's been there and he's done it so many places. You talked about Peterborough, won the Memorial Cup, won for Canada, you know, won as a young player with the Ducks. I mean,
yeah,
winning follows this kid around, and it doesn't for Joe. And that's why I think Joe's been so good, because he's carried these guys as they face an elimination, because his days are numbered. And he doesn't have the luxury of having the cup that Corey Perry has. This is his time, and it may never come again. And he has willed this team into a game six.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, Pavel, the thing about Perry, and I know what you said about Pavelski, but I never, you know, I'm not sure it's revisionist history, because I never worried that Joe Pavelski would come through once playoff time was around. But I questioned when the Ducks signed Corey Perry, because, you know, he's been so injured the last few years and broken down. Who knew if Humpty Dumpty's men could put him back together again? I mean, I just didn't know if there was anything here that's still left in the tank, physically, if he could put up with it. And what we've seen is the exact opposite. That in, you know, I found these games to be the intensity and the hitting have been out of this world. And it seems ironic, guys, that there were people, when this whole hockey in a bubble thing started, one of the questions was, well, how seriously are the players going to take it? All you got to do is watch the last two games to see the emotion, the hard hitting in there. I didn't think that Corey Perry could physically stand up to it. And instead, he's been one of the guys that has been dishing it out. So for me, what Pavelski's doing isn't a surprise. What Corey Perry, just from a physical point of view, is, and good on him.
Well, you know, and the thing is, though, when the Stars signed him, I had the same questions, guys. You know, could he withstand it? Could he hold up to it? He's been banged up so much, knee injury last year. But it was a one-year contract, mm-hmm. and it was $1.5 million. With another, I think, $1.75 million in bonuses potential for him. So to me, it was an easy contract for them to sign, because if it didn't work out, it was an easy one to get rid of, and it was only 1 year. And then look, I mean, this is what happens now is, you know, here they are playing in the Stanley Cup final in September, which nobody ever thought would happen. But, you know, they need him, and they need Pavelski. But Zaz, you brought up before Tyler Seguin, and boy, has he really struggled in these playoffs. But the last two games, Tyler Seguin's got 5 assists. He had 3 assists in game 5.
Yep.
Look at the picture as we record this right now. The picture on NHL.com is a picture of the game-winning goal with the puck right at Corey Perry's stick. Who's right there with him? Tyler Seguin, right in front of the net as well. And, you know, where was Tyler Seguin on some of the other plays? Either at the point, making a pass to set up a shot. He's been very involved. So I think Tyler Seguin, while he hasn't scored and he has struggled, and that's a big problem for the Stars, they've been able to overcome. And now they got to fight back here, because history's not on their side, but Tyler Seguin is being able to get some offense going for them and get involved. And I think that's key. But I mean, history is not on their side. The team that loses game 4 to go down 3-1 in the series, as the Stars did, is 0-27 in trying to come back and win the series. And they're one of 12 teams now that have forced a game six. Only 4 others have forced a game 7. None have won it. So history's not on their side. But, you know, I mean, they got these experienced guys who are coming through in the clutch. And that at least is the positive. One of the many positives they take away from that.
Well, to your point, you know, the fact that the first 3 rounds that the Stars managed to beat some really, really good teams. I mean, you know, Calgary gave them a good fight. To beat the Colorado the way they did, to beat Vegas the way that they did. And look, I especially the Colorado and Vegas series, I thought that you know, Colorado and Vegas were both going to beat the Stars in six games or less. Sagan struggled, and now he's starting to play better again. And, you know, for the three of us, this is not our first rodeo. We've been through a few Stanley Cup playoff wars before covering them. You know, I don't know about you guys, but my Spidey sense tingles when I see a player of that stature and talent struggling for two or three rounds. The first thing I think of is he's playing hurt.
Yeah,
I don't know that for a fact. You know, I can't tell you what it is, but the Tyler Seguin I've seen the last couple of games is not the Tyler Seguin that I saw in the first three rounds.
Yeah, and look, I mean, they changed their lines a little bit. They moved Tyler down and you know, maybe woke him up a little bit. And they certainly found instant chemistry, Perry and Seguin. You know, they're both veteran players. They play a similar type of game. So, you know, I think that helps. The other thing with Tyler, and we got to get to the Tampa Bay Lightning in a minute, but the other thing with Tyler to me that I've been so impressed with is how he's handled struggling.
Yes.
He's a guy that could go off the deep end, you know, really get inside himself and be like, woe is me, I'm not helping, and actually hurt the team. And he hasn't done that. To me, Tyler Seguin, you know, has matured so much throughout his career, and the way that he's handled this, you know, struggling on the biggest stage has been eye-opening to me. You know, it's all been all about the team. He hasn't really gotten into a funk. You know, even when he wasn't scoring, he was still out there doing all the other things that needed to be done, you know, for the team to be successful. So to me, you know, the points in the last couple of games have been nice. And you know, when you look at it and you look at guys and you know how emotional this is and how difficult it is, it's a good reward for being a good soldier.
No, couldn't agree more. You know, these are the type of situations where some guys you would hear bitching, you would hear excuses. And that's never come out of the mouth of either Tyler or, for that matter, Rick Bowness. And that, you know, you admire guys for that, because as the three of us all know, one of the things that always comes out the day after the cup is presented is the two finalists revealing, like, this guy's got to go in for surgery, this guy's got to go in, you know, he's going to have to heal for another 5 or 6 months. That's when you find out where all the injuries are. And, you know, you've heard none of it from the Dallas Stars. They're making no excuses, and good on them.
Yeah, no question. What you have heard from the Stars, and we'll get to Tampa here in a second, is about their penalties, right? And penalties have been a problem for them. Well, they weren't in game five. They gave him one power play. Tampa had one power play in the first period. And that's so key. If Dallas wants to be the first team to make this type of comeback and win this series in seven games, they've got to stay as disciplined as they were in that sense. Now, we can argue all we want about the penalty in overtime in game four to Jamie Benn and all that. It happened. They scored. Dallas had a power play opportunity as well in overtime, and they did not score. So it happened, whatever it may be. But the key thing for me in game five was one power play opportunity for Tampa. Because if you look, Tampa's power play was obviously on fire. It was 6-for-12 in the previous three games, four power plays each in game. And then Dallas's penalties have been a problem all playoffs. If they can stay 5-on-5, they will give themselves a chance to win. And that's exactly what they did in game five last night. So as we look ahead here to game six, to me, that's the biggest factor. We talk about Pavelski and Perry and Seguin. We can talk all we want about Heiskanen and Klingberg and Hudobin and everybody. Stay out of the box. They got a chance.
Well, I just want to make a quick point before we move to Tampa, Dan. But you mentioned how there's a no risk in signing Corey Perry. When I look at the Tampa side and I look at a guy like Pat Maroon and how you know, economically – What did he sign for? 1 year, 800,000?
Yeah, it was like 875,000 or something along those lines.
And I remember that. And that was just when he signed, it was like in a lot of places, it was just like a little footnote, you know, in the old newspaper days that all three of us know, it would have been a line in the Agate section. Okay. But I mean, I remember that happening, going like, what team for that economical price wouldn't want a guy that, I don't care if he plays 8 to 10 minutes a game. Like you said, Dan, stands in front of the net, takes all the crap, is an inspirational leader. So I find it fascinating that two of the guys that have helped the team off the ice and on the ice were on 1-year deals signed for minimal money. And it's a story for another day, but with the cap flattening or being flat moving ahead, I think you'll see a lot of these teams doing similar additions and signing guys for 1 year at very reasonable cost because they have to fill out their lineup. So you got to be smart. And these two guys in Corey Perry and obviously Patrick Maroon, they're examples of that kind of philosophy working out in the best scenario possible.
And they've also, look, this has been a really mean series, right? 100 hits every game so far. We're up over 500 hits after five games.
Isn't it great?
It's awesome, but it's never gotten out of hand, even with some of the hits, because those two guys are running around. Like, I love Patrick Maroon. Every time there's a little bit of a liberty taken, over he comes, and he just talks. He just says to whoever did it, hey, don't do that. That's not cool. We're not going to have that here. Otherwise, there's going to be an answer. And he's the answer, right? And it's been great because that's the way the game should be played. You know, take no prisoners, you know, no quarter given. And the physical wear and tear that's gone on in this final, the whole playoffs, but in this final is incomprehensible, right? When you think about it. I mean, Dallas is running guys out that I've never heard of. Right to play, and that's on me that I haven't heard of them. But they're not guys that you expect to be playing at this level at this time. You know, Sekera goes out last night; he blocks a shot. They're down to 4D. I'll tell you the one thing that I worry about when I'm Rick Bonus and I'm getting ready for Game Six, and I'm sure they're sleeping in late today, and nobody's going to touch the ice or anything. The numbers for their key guys are huge. Their 4D, their big 4D. 35 minutes or more each last night on top of an overtime game the night before. You know, Sekera was hurt. They don't really count on Henley much. He's been good, but they spot him a lot. So those four guys have been going over the boards every other shift. Whereas you look at Tampa Bay, you know, Hedman had 36 minutes. He was right behind Heiskanen. And then McDonough had 31. And then nobody else was near that, right? Because they go five deep. Six deep, they're okay, you know, even with Ruta being on the ice. So I think that cumulative wear and tear, you know, we talked about this last time on the podcast, Dan, and I said that the Dallas Stars remind me of a heavyweight fighter just hoping to get to the championship rounds and landing that one knockout blow. Now they need to land two knockout blows, and the Tampa Bay Lightning got to be really happy about the pain that they've inflicted in the Stars to take away some of their punching power.
You know, Sean, it's fascinating that you bring up the ice time and the fact that a kid like Heiskanen, who we all, you know, as good as he is now, I mean, he's still in his ascension stage. I mean, he's just going to get better and better. But in terms of gobbling up minutes, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how he handles it. I think for the most part, he's handled it well. But when you look at the other side at Victor Hedman, I had a chance to talk in the last week or two about him with a Hall of Famer in Nick Lidstrom and a future Hall of Famer in Zdeno Chara. And they both talked about when you are the guy on the blue line, when you are the stud, the franchise defenseman, you almost crave more minutes. I mean, you know, I know Nick Lidstrom said, you know, people on the outside say, how much can he play? How much wear and tear he is? But Lidstrom says you get into a routine, okay, where if you're not on every second shift, it kind of throws you off a bit. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see, because a guy like Victor Hedman, both Lidstrom and Chara said guys thrive on additional minutes, and that's what Hedman's doing right now. Look, Heiskanen's a little younger. So is Klingberg, okay? How are these guys going to – handle this? Are they the guys that are going to crave it? Are they the guys that are going to get better and better the more they play? I think we've seen a lot of that this year, but will they be able to take the next step? And look at the Stars. I mean, we can use the cliches, back against the wall, there's no tomorrow. But if I'm Rick Bonus and I, you know, let's face it, the Stars cannot lose another game. If they want to win the Stanley Cup, that's a simple fact. That's a simple math. You know, if I got to play Heiskanen 40 minutes a game, I'm going to do it. But at this point, you know, all bets are off, and it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to getting those additional minutes that all the great defensemen do.
Look, and the other thing here is Victor Hedman's a Viking. I mean, he is a man among men, right? He took a 3-minute shift yesterday, came back to the bench. Everybody's banging him on the helmet. You know, great job. He's barely breathing. You know, there's nothing, there's no exertion there, but he is a giant man who can take a lot of punishment. And Heiskanen and Lindell, you know, and all of those guys, except for the rig on the Dallas team, are not big.
Alexiak.
Are not big guys.
Yeah,
they got some height to them, but they're all kind of rail thin, and that's fine for the way they play, especially in the regular season. They're not seeing this kind of hockey day after day. The you know, 50 hits per team, and they've been targets. Right? Like, and not in a bad way, but Tampa gets in, Coleman, Gord, all those guys are coming in at 100 miles an hour, and they're just trying to line up and soften up their D. So you worry, you know, there's only two games left, but you worry about that cumulative effect that all of that physical play has had on guys that are not – people just bounce off of Victor Hedman.
Yeah.
They hit him, they fall down, and he walks, he skates away, and it's all good. I don't know if any of those guys on the Dallas blue line are there yet. You know, I think a guy like Heiskanen can grow into that. I don't know if he'll ever be as big as Hedman is, but he can get stronger, and he will get stronger. But, you know, I kind of look and I wonder at the big minutes, the amount of hits that have been absorbed. You know, Heiskanen hasn't been bad, but he, for the last two rounds, he hasn't been the player he was in the first two rounds. There's no denying that.
And, you know, Dan, I don't know if you agree with this, but when I watch the philosophy of what the Tampa Bay Lightning are doing, putting pucks deep to into the corners of where the two best defensemen on the Stars are, Klingberg and Heiskanen, and hitting them all the time, it reminds me of what the St. Louis Blues did on their recipe to winning a Stanley Cup last year. I covered the last three rounds with them, and the first one was against Dallas. And they just would dump it in and pound Heiskanen and Klingberg every chance they got. The next round against San Jose, they hammered Burns and Carlson so badly on the forecheck that Carlson didn't even finish the series. And the three of us saw what happened in Game 7 in Boston, you know, when St. Louis won the Cup, where the Bruins, and especially their back end, Chara notwithstanding, they were beat up because of that philosophy of just dumping it in and making the other team's best defenseman, you know, absorb a physical beating. It worked for St. Louis. And I think at least in this series, that's the same philosophy that the Tampa Bay Lightning have implemented against the Dallas Stars top D-men.
Yeah, and a couple of points to that. Number one, you talk about Heiskanen and we talk about Klingberg and these types of players. And Sean, you're right, they're not the biggest guys, but when we draw the comparisons or the people that Zeiss talked to, Lidstrom, Coffey, you know, I think of Niedermeyer too. Some of the things that those guys did, they weren't the biggest guys either. They weren't big rig type of players, but you couldn't catch Niedermeyer. You couldn't hit Lidstrom because he'd angle the way he angled his body, and, you know, he would never absorb a big hit. Those are the things I think that Heiskanen especially, I think Klingberg is what he is. I think Heiskanen especially is going to learn that. And to the other point, what you were just saying, Zai, is with the Lightning, how much they have changed. I mean, this is a team that would never dump the puck in. They never would dump it in, but they're seeing the fruits of it. They understand it. And look, I mean, let's talk about the Lightning here, because we've spent a lot of time here on Dallas and a team that's trailing 3-2 in the series, right, because of what we've seen from them. But here's Tampa Bay up 3-2 in the series. Sean, you're talking about Victor Hedman like a Viking. I watched his press conference last night. It didn't even look like he played a game.
Yeah.
You know, it was incredible. And he's just like, oh, no, we're fine. We're fine. Look, they're 5-0 in the postseason, not including the round robin. 5-0 in the postseason in games after a loss. Andrei Vasilevskiy has been brilliant in the last couple of games after a loss. You know, he's got, I think, I looked it up, it was a 9.52 save percentage in the last three games after a loss, right? So we talk all we want here about Dallas and the position that they've put themselves in, and Perry and Pavelski and whatnot. Here are the Tampa Bay Lightning guys, and they're just saying, okay, no big deal. And by the way, we've been through this in the last round too, lost in overtime against the Islanders in game 5. We'll come back. We're fine. No big deal. We'll win this in 6. And really, that's the confidence that this team is playing with right now.
I can remember at the trade deadline being in Tampa and the Lightning had just made the trade for Barkley Goodrow. And, you know, just chatting with their GM, Julien Brisebois.
How does Zeiss get the Tampa assignment for trade deadline? I was just, you know, I mean, like.
Listen, you were Mr. Tampa, okay? The only reason you didn't spend four rounds in Tampa in previous years is because they never went four rounds.
Yeah, so. You're in Toronto, March, like, oh, I get to Tampa now. They'll get the good weather, you know. Anyway, you were talking to Julien.
Talking to Julien Brisebois at the Tiki Bar,
yeah,
at Jackson's, or at the penalty box?
Listen, you guys know Tiki is number one in my heart. Okay? Always will be, but no. And he was saying the fact that yeah, they probably overpaid for a guy like Barkley Goodrow, but with Barkley, with a guy like Blake Coleman, who they also picked up from the New Jersey Devils at the trade deadline, and then you go back to the Patrick Maroon signing. He had said over the summer, these were three individual players as part of a handful that they had identified that, A, they might be available, and, B, these are the type of players that we need to change the personality of our team. Translation, the Tampa Bay Lightning are no longer just the finesse team. I know we've talked about this throughout the playoffs. They can play now whatever way the opponent wants to play. You want to shut down our run-and-gun game? Fine. Will grind away with you. And I just think that I always remember when he said that. Maybe we did overpay, but we wanted this guy. We wanted that guy. They got them. And, you know, this goes far beyond analytics. This goes far beyond what those guys are doing in the scoring race. You just got to see shift by shift the impact that these guys have. If you want to call them unsung heroes, I mean, Barkley Goodrow, every shift, this guy just doesn't stop. And, you know, I think it was great on the part of Tampa Bay management to identify, hey, look, we cannot win by playing this way. And now I just think I've always thought that they've been the most talented team in the league. Hence the reason I picked them three consecutive years to win the cup. But this year, I really thought they were the best team in the league. And there is a difference between being the most talented team and the best team. And, you know, we'll see if they win the cup, but I think we've seen the difference in this team the last 2 months.
Look, but they didn't change their DNA, which is the huge part about it, right? They tinkered on the edges. Like, we've talked, you know, even in the past podcast, you know, we talked about Barclay a little bit. We've talked about Vasilevsky. I can't talk enough about Hedman. But there's two guys that are playing for them in Point and Kucherov, mm-hmm. who are ridiculous. I don't even know if there's another word. Bazonkers, maybe. I don't know what it is. But night after night, look, they didn't have a great game last night on the stat sheet. They are caving in the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
They're caving them in. Every time they're on the ice, the puck's in the zone for the whole time. You know, they're just – they got them back on their heels. Every time they come over the boards, if you're a Stars fan, you literally hold your breath for 45 seconds, and you're like, please let us survive. We got a running chance against the other three lines, but these guys – there's nothing that Dallas can do. They're literally – if you look at the analytic numbers and the eye test, they're getting completely crushed. Every time that line's on the ice. And you know, Kucherov's got what, 30, 35, 36 points? He's in Malkin territory now.
Yeah.
You know, as far as what he's doing. And you know, is only the third player behind, like, Gretzky and Mario Lemieux in the number of assists he's had in a playoff. I mean, and we're not talking about him. And to me, the most amazing thing is when you get to the end and however it ends, and you still have to assume that Tampa Bay wins, when they win and you have a Conn Smythe vote, Kucherov isn't a slam dunk.
No.
Oh, no. Anything but.
Anything but a slam dunk. But let's – the numbers are 33 points right now for Kucherov, 26 assists, all right? So he's got – the other two guys, as you mentioned, Sean, who have had at least 26 assists in a postseason are Gretzky, who did it four times – and Mario Lemieux, who did it one time. So that's the company that Nikita Kucherov is keeping right now. And you're right, Sean. And Zaza, I'll let you go talk about Kucherov a little bit too. But, I mean, we always talk, and I go back to that old cliche, your best players got to be your best players, right? You know, we talk about it all the time, you know, and Sean, I think we did last week, you know, you could talk about the third line guy winning a faceoff, you know, in the defensive zone all day, because that's such a key part of the game, but they ain't going anywhere without Nikita Kucherov. And he has been you're right. Every single time he has the puck, I think there's going to be a scoring chance. Zyes, what do you think of Kucherov?
Well, no, I think he's been outstanding. And I think we've seen another aspect of him, because I think unless you follow the Tampa Bay Lightning, you think of, even though he puts up high point numbers, I think that the average fan probably thinks of him as a sniper, a goal scorer. And the fact that we're now seeing, or, you know, at least a lot of the hockey world and fans out there that don't see the Lightning that often are seeing just what an outstanding playmaker he is. And let's not forget, guys, he missed some games too in these playoffs. He was a little banged up, and so has Point been. And it just seems that they've had guys pick them up when guys have been hurt. And to the Kucherov point, I think the other thing with Tampa Bay is the way that they've adjusted their power play without Stamkos there. Because, you know, when they had a healthy Kucherov and a healthy Stamkos, they could play that fan umbrella where, you know, you've got Kucherov on one side, Stamkos on the other side waiting for one-timers. And it's like you're looking at the penalty killers going, okay, cheat one way. Go ahead, do it. Because we'll just pass it to the other guys. They have totally changed the way that their power play has been. And now you're seeing Kucherov as more of a playmaker than you are a finisher, which he can do both of. And I think it what it says is it's an endorsement of what a complete player this guy is, as opposed to just the goal scorer that a lot of people have the stereotype of him being.
I could certainly watch him skate all day in the offensive zone. He turns people around. You know, he comes in, he button hooks, head up, looking for a pass. You know, those two passes he made on the power play in game four,
yeah,
you know, were out of this world. You know, it completely frustrates the defense, not only with his speed, but with his ability, like I said, to, you know, work his edges and do things that you don't expect him to do. And then the other thing that I've seen from him is he's a lot more willing, and especially in the playoffs, to go hard to the net, to drive
right
the net.
Work, yep.
And you know, take on the D and go to those areas with the puck that, you know, you can create chaos and make things happen. So, you know, like I said, we spent a lot of time talking about Barclay Goodrow last week. You know, I'll talk about the Stars role players all day long, you know, and how much they miss Blake Como. But my God, are the superstars in this series are just breathtaking.
Yeah. And look, guys, look how long we've been talking, about the finals so far. And, we mentioned Vasilevsky, what, once?
Once.
Yeah. I mean, that just goes to your point, Sean.
And we haven't mentioned Kudobin at all.
Yeah, that's another one, too. But back to Kucherov for one sec. I mean, I get the point you're making, Zyes, where people would think he is, you know, he's a sniper because he has an amazing shot. He does. His shot is amazing, and you're 100% right about why they've adjusted on the power play. The power play completely runs from the point through him now. But let's not forget, he had 87 assists last year.
I know.
So he's a hell of a playmaker, except now it's really coming out, because 87 assists in a regular season when they were rolling through looked great. What do people remember about Kucherov last year? They remember him getting suspended for game three against Columbus,
yeah,
right? I mean, that's what they remember right now. He won the Hart, he won the, you know, the Art Ross, he won the Ted Lindsay and all that stuff. But people remember him getting suspended. And now we're seeing a Kucherov that's far more keeping his emotions in check. We had Ryan Callahan on last week talking about that, just how he has seen, you know, he's not showing his frustrations as much, you know, wearing them as much, because that's obvious to the other team. And he's been lights out. But you're right. We haven't talked much about the goaltending. And that was, you know, it's almost been a forgotten storyline in the series because of all these other guys stepping up. But let's get it, like, let's wrap up our cup final talk with this. I'll throw it out there to the both of you guys. Zyes, you can go first, and then I'll answer it at the end. A, is this going to a game seven? B, who is winning this series? Zyes, go ahead.
Tampa's going to win game six. and win the Stanley Cup. I actually think and agree with John Cooper that I have no issues with the way that Tampa played last night. In fact, I thought they played a very good game. And you got to stay the course. And I know that's a cliche, cue all the people are rolling their eyes, but it is. You got to just keep going the way that you did. I thought, what in the first overtime, how many shots did Dallas have? One? So what
Two.
Do you
yeah. Yeah.
So what are you supposed to ask of your team more than that? And I think, Dan, you brought up the point that what their record is, 5-0 when coming mm-hmm. off a, you know, so yeah. coming off a loss. So I think that Tampa wins this, and I'm going to say, I think that we've talked a lot about the Stars on both teams, but I think Victor Hedman wins the Conn Smythe because I think he's just been that constant factor. He controls the games, and I'm going to go back and by something that you said, Dan, about Kucherov getting suspended against Columbus. To me, the biggest thing about them getting swept, the Lightning, by Columbus last year was the fact that Victor Hedman was first hurt and then didn't even play. And I remember when they had the big lead in game one and then gave it up to Columbus, and there was a couple of plays where guys just deked around Hedman and he couldn't move, and it was like, uh-oh. So you know what? In this playoffs, they've been without Stamkos for other than, what, five shifts? Mm-hmm. Kucherov's been hurt. Point's been hurt. Hey, we all remember in the play-in rounds against Philly when it looked like he had snapped his ankle and wasn't going to play. And he came back the next game and played 57 minutes in a 5-overtime win over Columbus. So, for me, it's over. It's over on Monday. Tampa wins the Cup and Victor Hedman wins the Conn Smythe. Sean?
I'm going to be greedy, man. I want hockey on Wednesday. I don't want this series to end. Can we make it a best of 9, best of 11?
11.
Nobody's got any place to go. We need hockey, so let's at least get it to 7. Look, winning 3 games in a row against the Tampa Bay Lightning is a Herculean task. I don't know that Dallas can do that. I think they put a little doubt in their mind. You know, I thought the thing, they were so much better in the second overtime than they were in the first overtime. Mm. And Rick Bowness came out afterwards and he said, look, I have to talk to my team after that first overtime and be like, we can't play not to lose.
Yeah, you can't be scared.
We have to play to win. If we lose playing to win, then we lose. If we lose playing not to lose, then we've really lost. Like, we haven't given it our best shot. And I think it all clicked for them in that second overtime, and they saw exactly what Rick was talking about, and they went out and they played to win. And they were a different team, and they should have been tired, and they should have been worn out, and they should have been a lot of things, but they weren't. So, you know, now Tampa has to deal with a little bit of doubt in their mind, and they also have to deal with 2 more days of us trying to pick for season-ending stories about, you know, that story we need right at deadline, why you won the cup, what it was like, without saying it, and they have to fight all of that off, you know, that thinking about the big shiny trophy in the building. So I can see there's a lot of ways we can get to a game 7. I don't know that Dallas can pull off the trifecta, but I think they can double down and get us there. And then Wednesday, oh my God, what a feast of hockey that's going to be, and what a perfect way to end what has been an amazing tournament that we never thought we would have. I can't think of a better exclamation point. So I have both my fingers crossed. Game 7, quadruple overtime.
Oh God. I'll keep this quite simple before, because I do want to hit on some news and notes with you guys that are going on around the league. I picked Tampa in 6. I picked Victor Hedman to win the Conn Smythe. Tampa's going to win in 6. Victor Hedman's going to win the Conn Smythe. It might go overtime. It might not, but Tampa's going to win the game. They're going to win the Stanley Cup. And finally, I'm going to be right. Zeiss, you did them 3 years in a row. I think this is my 3rd year in a row as well, picking the Lightning to win the Stanley Cup. We're going to be right this time. So there you have it. So let's get – there's other things going on, obviously. As soon as this ends, whether it ends Monday or it ends Wednesday, the 3 of us and everybody else in the hockey media – jump right into free agency, jump right into the draft, right? There's really no time to waste here, but there's already a lot of stuff going on. And we've seen trades. We've seen the Hornquist trade. We've seen the Eric Staal trade. We saw the Mark Staal trade. Are the Winnipeg Jets really going to trade Patrick Laine? I mean, are they really going to trade Patrick Laine? Because apparently Kevin Cheveldayoff, their GM, is listening right now. Honestly, guys, I think that's insane. I really do. I don't think you trade a guy who can score 50 goals.
You know what? I agree. And the one thing about Patrick Laine, I mean, we've all three of us have dealt with him. He's wonderfully candid. He's you know, sometimes people don't know how to take him, but I love the kid. I love dealing with him. I love watching him play. I think he was unfairly compared a little bit when he came out of the draft, you know, pick second by Winnipeg after Austin Matthews. There's been a lot of comparisons. I mean, they're not the same player, okay? It's like apples and oranges. The kids, I remember when he struggled, I think, in his sophomore year, and people are going like, uh-oh, and it's like, he's still a teenager. Would you give him a little bit of slack? You cannot teach somebody to score that has the natural goal-scoring ability of Patrick Laine. And therefore, I don't care how many practices you have. I don't care how many hockey schools you go to in the summer, how many personal trainers you have. There's some things you cannot teach. And that's why I think it's a mistake if Winnipeg did that, because this kid has it. You know, you guys can debate what it is. But when it comes to goal scoring, I do think that he's got a God-given talent, a.k.a. it.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here. I don't know that I would trade Patrick Laine, but this is a brave new world we're entering into, right? Like, roster management is going to be huge. And can you tie up a ton of flat cap space in one player if you want to be a champion, mm-hmm. right? Can you take, you know, and it's more so with goalies, you know, can you tie that money up in your goalies? But I think it's also in your stars, right? Like you're going to start to see, especially with a flat cap, when you have a lot of money tied up in a few key players, you know, your ability to manage your roster is handcuffed. I think you're seeing that right now with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jim Rutherford is on a trading frenzy. You know, because he needs to open up cap space. His team is at a crossroads and they need certain things. So now he's unloading players left and right. Hornquist's out the door. He's got to trade one of his goalies. You know, nothing seems to be off limits. I think when you start tying up a ton of money, and Patrick Laine is going to get a ton of money when he becomes a free agent next year, you know, the money is going to be astronomical. You have other players, you know, that they have that have a lot of money. Connor Hellebuck's going to get a lot of money, right? Like, so their roster management is going to be difficult. And if somebody comes and they back up the Brinks truck and they're like, we have a ton of cap space, we know we can sign them, and here's a first round pick, here's a second round pick, here's two NHL ready players, and here's our best prospect. Like, Kevin's not doing his due diligence if he doesn't at least think about it.
No, and I agree with that. But when I look at the Winnipeg Jets, and, you know, what I'm about to say, hockey blasphemy in the Canadian prairies, but I'm a big boy, so I can take it, bring it on. But, you know, if unless you're sure that you're going to win the Stanley Cup in the next year, and I'm looking at a guy like Patrick Laine in a sport where now it's all about the 22, 23, and 24-year-olds. He's so young. I would actually think of, and I, you know, the return might be a lot different, but I would actually think of seeing if there was a market for a guy like Blake Wheeler. I know he's the team captain. I know that he's the team leader, but he makes a lot of money. And when I'm looking moving forward, which direction do I want to go in as a general manager, if I'm going to have to pay somebody a large chunk of money? I think I want to be moving with Patrick Laine moving forward, you know, and that's not a shot against Blake Wheeler, but I mean, he's in his 30s. I mean, how much return are you going to get from him? So I think those are the type of things that you have to balance, and Laine's age has to be a factor.
I agree with you guys. I don't think you're going to get the guaranteed value back that you are going to get from, you know, if you keep Laine, right? Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think the age is a factor. I think it's a very important factor in the way the league is right now. That's another reason you're 100% right to keep him. And yeah, I mean, if you can explore options for other guys to save on the cap in other ways, and you're right, you might not get the same amount back, but that's okay because you're keeping the guy that you like, give you the greatest value for the greatest amount of years. I think that's important. But it's funny, we talk about, you know, young players and, you know, the cap and all that. Here's Jeff Petrie signing a 4-year deal, $25 million, right? So, I mean, you probably know this a little bit better than I do, just being around the Canadians a little bit more. The value of Jeff Petrie to Montreal, I wonder, can you get, I mean, obviously it's a nice deal for Jeff Petrie. And what is that value that Petrie brings to the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, I think there's a lot of value because he has emerged in the last year or two. Not only is that kind of steadying force defenseman, but he's become an offensive force for them. And I would say that, you know, when you look at the depth of the Montreal Canadiens on the blue line, obviously you start with Shea Weber, who, when he's healthy, and we saw that against the Pittsburgh Penguins, in the play-in round, he can still be the force that he was in Nashville. We got a glimpse of that again, just how he can dominate games. But again, age, physical durability, those are both questions. Whereas Petrie has become that guy that, you know, we saw him in some games gobbling up 30, 35 minutes a game. So I think he's a vital part of that defense. And I think he's one of those players, guys, whose value is more important to the team he's on than maybe it would be if he was on the open market.
I agree 100%. And before we wrap up, I look to Ottawa and I see what's happening there. And, you know, they bought out Bobby Ryan this week and, yep, you know, a horrible end to what was a very good career there. I thought he was so valuable to them, you know, coming off the Masterton, coming off all the struggles that he's had. And I just want to say, you know, that I think he's going to be a very valuable piece at probably a very reasonable price for another team. I don't think his career is over, you know, and it's funny, we just talked about a couple of ones and twos with Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine. And you almost forget that Bobby Ryan was the two.
Yeah.
To Sidney Crosby. He was a hell of a player coming out and has a really good career, but I think he's at that point in his career where he really helps the team. You know, we talked about Patrick Maroon coming in. We talked about, you know, Perry and those guys.
Perry, yeah.
Like, I think he's that kind of guy at this point in his career. You know, he can still score you some goals, but he's really going to help you out. And then they also cut ties with Craig Anderson. Like, that Ottawa Senators team is unrecognizable. You think about the team that pushed the Penguins to overtime of game 7 to go to a cup final.
Is there anybody left?
I'm not sure. What is it? Borowiecki?
Borowiecki, yeah.
I think, yeah, but I think
there's... And he's going to go.
Yeah, he posted something on Instagram, some kind of cryptic message, like, thanks for my time. And all. So I don't know if anything's official. But yeah, I think he's gone too. I can't think off the top of my head. You're right. If there is anybody left on that team, and
I'm sure there is, but you know, like,
it's, I mean, nobody, it's nobody that it, that we can think of off the top of our head. I mean, it's been a complete remake, and let's not kid ourselves, there's a lot of talent there, and it's a lot of young talent, and if there's no veterans there to lead them through it, they're gonna get their teeth kicked in. Like, this is a rough league, and I'm not talking physically, I'm talking mentally and emotionally. You can only take so much of being beaten, of stepping on the ice and knowing that the odds are stacked against you to win. And young talent's great, and young talent eventually morphs into superstar talent like it has in Tampa Bay. But you can't get there by losing. Like, it doesn't work.
Well, the Ottawa Senators, I mean, when you look at their team, they're going to have two of the top five picks. They, you know, when I look at when they selected Brady Tkachuk in the top five, there were some people that said, oh, they, you know, there were a couple players on the board that maybe they should have gone for instead of him. I've been really impressed by him. He looks like a future team leader, if not one now. Thomas Chabot is very, very underrated. I think he's going to be, you know, depending on the team around him, could vie for a Norris in you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. But you're right, Sean. And that's where, to me, it's going to be fascinating because they are going to be so young that what are they going to do? Are they going to be on, you know, we mentioned as you know, Patrick Maroon and Corey Perry, they let a couple of those guys go. are they going to be in the market for those $800,000 to $1 million veteran players who are going to be around, you know, looking for work? Because I think there's going to be, you know, once we get past the first few days of free agency, I think, guys, we're going to see a lot of those guys that are going to be around the minimal salary range, veteran players that teams can scoop up. It'll be fascinating to see if Ottawa decides to go that route, because I agree with Sean. I think they have to, because you cannot go through a season with some – I don't care how talented your kids are – with some kind of experience back.
And let's not forget, if they hit on all these guys, which is the hope, you got
to
pay them all.
You're going
to have to pay them. Yep. They all come up at the same time within a two-year window. You know, you hit on your draft picks, you hit on Shabbat, you hit on Tkachuk. They're all looking for big money, you know, when they hit 27 years old. So – how are you going to pay them all? You got to have some stratters. You got to have, you know, here's my good guys, and they're going to come up for contracts, and I got to figure out how I'm going to pay them. And here's everybody else that's going to kind of make my team work.
And to your point, real quick, that's why, and this is, you know, the situation with another team, but the whole Jacob Markstrom situation in Vancouver, for me, the way that I saw Thatcher Demko play, I think that at least you've seen enough in his body of work, even before the playoffs, that, you know what, you got to look long and hard, at least in my opinion, of, you know, not depending on what Markstrom wants. I mean, you're going to have to pay Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, to your point, Sean, in the next couple of years. Okay. So if you've got an up and coming goalie, how flexible is your cap going to be if you pay Markstrom when you have Demko there already? Because those two franchise players, and I do think that Quinn Hughes and Pettersson are foundational players, you're going to have to play them. I pay them. I don't think that, you know, going forward, you can afford to lose either of those kids. And therefore, that's why I kind of think that, you know, I'm not sure I would pay Markstrom.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the case with a lot of goalies. You know, you think about the goalie market, which could be a whole other conversation, which we won't get into right now. Yeah. But, you know, like, because I do want to wrap up. But, you know, the Rangers are going to – Henrik Lundqvist won't be back, and they're going to have cheaper goaltending.
Yep.
You know, and they just traded Mark Stahl, you know, frees up more cap space. So they're doing that there. And Holtby, exactly, in Washington. Samsonov will be the number one there. So they'll have cheaper goaltending. If you like the guy who's young, you got to go with the guy who's young. It's exactly – I 100% agree to your, you know, with that point, size. But by the way, before we wrap, I did look. I think – and this is just a quick cursory glance at it. In that 2017 Ottawa Senators team, I think, and I could be wrong, the only guy that played in the playoffs that year is still around is Colin White, who played one game in the playoffs.
Wow.
So I could be wrong. I could be missing somebody obvious. It was a quick glance, but I don't think I am. So that tells you the turnover there. Pretty remarkable turnover there. Sean, you're right. You're going to have to pay them all, so you got to have to make that pick there. But we still got, before we get to the draft, October 6th and 7th, and free agency October 9th, we've got Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final Monday night. We're recording this Sunday. And we are all very much looking forward to it. Zyes, I'll give you the last word. Go ahead.
We love this game. It's coming up. It's the Stanley Cup Final. Why? Because it's the Cup, baby. So enjoy, everybody. Thanks for having me on. And I'm going to end the way that I started. You know, in these chaotic times that are 2020, everybody be safe and healthy to you and your families and all the listeners. And let's love it, man.
A great sentiment, Mike. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we are going to love it. We're going to love it on Monday with Game 6. And I called it here first. We're going to love it on Wednesday with Game 7, maybe with multiple overtimes.
Quadruple.
Yeah, and then, you know, maybe we sleep for 12 hours, and then we start to get ready for the draft. So, you know, October's going to be great as well, just in a different way. And we're going to have a ton of content throughout that month as we break down the draft and free agency and get ready for whenever next year is going to be. But we got some hockey games to enjoy before we do that, right, Dan?
Cup celebration in September, off season starting in October. It's 2020. Why not? Everybody stay safe out there.